Welcome to another edition of Sports Look here on Care Radio. It is great to have you with us on a Thursday evening. Sports Look, as always, brought to you by our fantastic sponsors, Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, Taco John's, and Exchange Bank. Gus, our upcoming sports schedule, as always, it's full, and we've got a couple of great long-time rivalry-type games coming up for listeners this weekend. First of all, tomorrow night, we make our second trip to Effingham this season. This time, we're going to watch ACCHS as they will host Mar Hill Mount Academy. I tell you what, both of them looking for a spring back this week, so we'll be talking about that. ACCHS MHMA tomorrow night at 7. Then on Saturday, from Wilcox Stadium, it'll be the Benedictine Ravens. They're going to be hosting Culver Stockton. What a switch. Culver receiving votes in the national poll, Benedictine unranked. When has that ever happened? We'll talk about that, too. That's a 1 o'clock game, and we've got a 12:30 pregame for that. Great halftime with Raven receiver, tight end, and still in the record books, Danny Neal. So we'll be talking to Danny at halftime of the game that Saturday. That all said, quick look over our shoulder at scores from last week, and man, there were some points rolled up. Let's look at the KCAL, and how about that Phoenix, huh?
Yeah, the Phoenix putting up 70 points the other night against Harmon, and you know, it started early with the block punt that went in for the touchdown, and you know, Atchison just looked like they were having a perfect game on their point, right? They scored on special teams, they scored on defense, they scored on offense, got a lot of guys in, and Coach Smith has that thing rolling pretty well right now.
Yes, and of course, a great homecoming group, you know, so that was very nice for them to win that big event. So Atchison, a shutout win. Sumner got by Wyandotte. Sumner's pretty good, 35-8. You saw the T-Birds of Shawnee Heights defeat Schlegel, 54-6. And another pretty high-scoring game is it was Wamego Oliver Washington on the road, 45-6. In the Northeast Kansas League, the game that had the people's attention all the way across the state, a couple of undefeateds coming together, and ACCHS traveled to Seneca. Nemaha Central was able to secure a very hard-fought 20-0 win over the Tigers.
And for Nemaha Central, we're going to talk about it here in just a second as we look at the district standings. For Nemaha Central, probably wishing they had that extra point.
That one could make a huge difference with 21 being the magic number. So, also, it was Republic County going up to Guy Galley Field, coming away with a 44-16 win over the Ravens. Jeff North, boy, they fired up the offense, 60 points, knocking off Horton, who had 3. Jackson Heights defeats Wabunsee 22-8, and other games in the NEKL. Pleasant Ridge continues to play really good football. I'm so impressed with this group. It was the Rams over Mission Valley 34-28, and then there were the next two games.
They were what we thought they would.
They were exactly as. Yeah. Silver Lake knocked off Oskaloosa 53-0, and Rossville Even more impressively over McLeod, 66-0. And, guys, you talk about districts, they are beginning to shape up now as district play has just begun.
Yeah, taking a look at the districts, I mean, the one that I think a lot of us around here are really interested in is, 2A District 4.
Yep, and in District 4, Republic County, St. Mary's, Nemaha Central, those teams are the 1-0 teams in the district with Atchison County, MHMA, and Riverside. But overall records, you know, these teams are pretty good. You've got, you know, 2-1, 3-1, 3-1, 2-2. You've got some very, very good teams. But you mentioned Nemaha Central, as Republic County won, and they maxed out on 21 points. So did St. Mary's, but Nemaha Central with only 20, that puts them all alone in third place.
Yeah, and for the Tigers, you flip the script and you say, yeah, you lost to Nemaha Central, but you kept it within the 20, yeah. And so you've bought yourself a point to kick down the road. So
absolutely. And, by the way, just to look at District 3, we mentioned with Rossville and Silver Lake, 4-0, 3-1, Pleasant Ridge is 3-1, and all of them undefeated in that District 3. Then you got Mission Valley, McLeod, and Oskaloosa, the next three teams down. So there is good football around and in the area. And I tell you what, you're going to want to be paying attention to the schedules because, again, it kind of bounces around. We don't always see all of the district team or all of the conference teams playing one another because of the district implications. And then,
you,
of course,
do you like the expanded districts like this?
No,
like,
I dislike them.
I guess I call them big districts now.
I dislike them totally.
Well, it just throws you off because in the past it used to always be the last three, right?
Yep.
It was easier to remember, I think, that, you know, just worry about the last three.
And I don't like not knowing week nine.
Yeah, that's the whole mystery game in week nine is kind of something that I haven't grown used to just quite yet.
No. Oh, and by the way, we're talking about other groups in Class 1A. District 2, that's a great district, man. You got Centralia, 3-0 and 3-1 overall. JCN is 2-0 in the district, 3-1 overall. Well, Buncee is 1-1, 3-1 overall. Troy 1-1, 3-1 overall. Jackson Heights is a 500 team. And then you still got Valley Heights at 1-2 and Horton, the final team in that District 2 in Class 1A. Some outstanding teams in that group, you know? That said, these teams are all going to be playing one another this Friday night. And a look at tomorrow night's schedule. In the KCAL, Atchison will step out of this conference and go back and play an old conference opponent. And Gus, the Golden Bears are really, really good this year.
You know what's crazy? As a kid, I had a pair of Turner Golden Bears shorts, right? I remember as a little kid, we went down to Turner for a football game, and you know me, I'm all about the merchandise.
Gotta
right?
have
like,
the gear,
like,
man.
You gotta have some gear somewhere, and yeah, so that'll be kind of fun to rekindle that rivalry, Atchison at Turner.
Yep, Wyandotte at Washington in the battle of the W's here. One of them gets the W. Sumner will be Saturday at Schlegel.
Right, because is it Schlegel and Washington? Do they share that
correct.
Field? And so that's probably why it's a Friday and then a Saturday. So.
And then you're going to have Harmon at home with Missouri team, KC Southeast. Those are the KCAL games. In the Northeast Kansas League, we mentioned tomorrow night we will have Moore Hill Mount Academy and ACCHS here on CARE. It'll be Mission Valley at McLouth. Troy goes to Jackson Heights. It'll be Pleasant Ridge on the road at McLouth. Jeff North is at home. This is going to be a really good game with Centralia. And then Mission Valley travels to Oskaloosa. There are going to be, in those six games, there are going to be six competitive games. So it should be kind of fun there. Tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. We've got lots more to talk about as Sports Look continues here on CARE. Back with you here on a Thursday Sports Look as Gus, the Benedictine Ravens, on the road. We went up to the Bruce Jenner Sports Complex and watched the Ravens at Graceland Saturday. Pretty good ball game. Benedictine playing pretty well.
Yeah, Benedictine, it seems like they've kind of woke up a little bit on the offensive end 2 weeks in a row, putting up a lot of points. Did give up that late touchdown, so I'm sure the defense a little upset about that. But right now, I mean, just going off on offense. And honestly, we always talk about it. Sometimes it just takes a minute to implement the offense. And sometimes it takes a minute to get the athletes in the right position, right?
I think that's true. And you still see that happening. New names we're seeing coming in every week. People maybe moving to a different position. And Gus is, as well as he played, and I think I've seen him even play better than this, congratulations to Garrett Kettle, the Conference Offensive Player of the Week this week.
You know, we walked away from that game on Saturday, and we talked about so many different things and how well the offense looked, but I don't think for a second it really crossed my mind that Garrett was going to be in that Conference Player of the Week type air, because every week there's somebody that does something spectacular in this conference, and so, you know, hats off to Garrett Kettle, a well-deserved honor for him.
No question about it. Other games that were going on last week around the Heart of America Athletic Conference, it was Grandview with another win at home. It was not a runaway, 23-6 over a pesky Evangel team. You've got to make you wonder, Evangel maybe a little better than you think.
Yeah, at half, that was a little tighter of a ball game. In the second half, Grandview able to put a little distance in between them and you know, Evangel, but again, Evangel hanging around, I think, a little longer than Grandview would have liked.
Tell you what, no defense being played in Canton last Saturday as Culver Stockton defeated Central Methodist 44-36, a one score win.
Yeah, and Culver Stockton had to come from behind in that ball game because early on Central Methodist took the lead on him and held it for much of the game, but late in the third quarter and moving into the fourth quarter, Culver was able to, I guess, surpass them in points is the only way to put that because, you know, not a whole lot of stops in a game like that.
It was Baker coming away with a big win up at Clark. That's not a real major feat, you know. You don't get a lot of jumping up and down about that. They did what they needed to do. Peru surprises me a little bit as they continue to win. They were a 21-14 winner at home over Mid-America. And on the road, Missouri Valley, a close win over William Penn, 30-27 at the Statesman's homecoming game. So it was a big week, a lot of interesting games. And again, I'm looking at the next opponent for Benedictine and thinking, you know what, they had a pretty good week last week.
Yeah, Culver Stockton, is that weird that they're having such a good year? I mean, I think we kind of anticipated it knowing what kind of a team that they were going to bring back this year. But for me, I guess it's just kind of odd to think that Culver Stockton is as good as they are.
Okay, now I have to, we're going to break the script a little bit here and just go off on a very brief tangent. Over the course of the past 2 weeks, after having gone 1-2 to begin the season, Benedictine had lost games 2 and 3. They're on a two-game losing streak, unheard of. Well, they turn around and have won their last two games by what, like 130 or 40-7, okay, combined score. And yet they continue to fall in the national poll and get not a vote. It's just disappointing to me. I'm just shocked that with big wins like that and a team with a tradition and a history, they're not getting any love from the Raiders.
Do you think some of it is that, like, people are looking down on the Heart of America right now? Right? Like, the Heart of America Athletic Conference was a conference who year in and year out had competitors, right? Like, you know, you were talking about Baker, Benedictine, you were talking about Grandview. A lot of years you were talking about an Evangel or a Mid-America. And now you've got Grandview and you've got Baker.
Yep.
And you've got Culver receiving votes, so that makes people like, maybe. But the problem is you have some of these conferences like the Mid-States football. They've got 4 or 5 teams in the top 20.
GPAC probably.
GPAC has like 3 or 4. KCAC right now. What, Avila, I think, lost the other day, so they finally fell out. But until last week, they had 4 teams in the top 25. So right now, somebody needs to start beating the drum a little harder for the Heart of America Athletic Conference when it comes to, you know, getting those numbers out there, trying to get on the good side of the Raiders.
Yeah, Benedict, not in the poll, but again, only Grandview and Baker. Now they both continue to scoot up just a little bit. Baker's cracked the top 10 now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, with the two high teams, but like you say, no one in the middle. And you got good teams in the middle. If you look at the North right now, with Grandview at 5-0, and I think, what, number 3 in the country, maybe something like that. Culver Stockton is a 4-1 team and just barely getting votes. I mean, they've played good opponents. You got Peru at 3-2. They're playing well. Then Penn, Clark, and Graceland round out the North Division. In the South, how good are they? Baker is 4-1. All right. So, okay, top 10, it's kind of a stretch. Their only loss was to Grandview, so okay.
Yeah,
but then you've got right behind him, Benedictine is 3-2, Central Methodist 3-2, Evangel 3-2, Missouri Valley 3-2, none of them getting any love at all.
And Missouri, who would have thought, Mid-America in the cellar right now at 1-4.
Yes. So it is going to be pretty interesting, and got a big week of football coming up around the Heart of America Athletic Conference. And again, we mentioned that Benedictine is going to be at home, and they're going to have their hands full, certainly, with Culver Stockton. Good news for the Ravens. It's going to be family weekend, so there's going to be another packed house. You're going to have Grandview on the road at Missouri Valley. And yeah, there won't be enough Viking luck in that one. Baker at home with Graceland. It's going to be another runaway. You've got Clark and Mid-America. Good news for those two teams is somebody's going to win a ball game. You've got Penn going to Central Methodist. That may be the most competitive game. Those first 4 were 1 o'clock games. This is a 2 o'clock game, Penn and Methodist. And then another night game down in Nixon, Missouri. Peru Evangel. That
should be a game, right? Yeah. Like, I think that's the game that maybe I'm going to keep my eye on in the evening, because Peru State is a team who a couple weeks ago we saw play Benedictine really well and then kind of have the hangover afterwards. For Evangel, they're a team that I just can't gauge right now, and so, again, that would be a good measuring stick type game.
Pick one right now. Go on the board.
Evangel.
Nope.
Nope. We're going to split the difference.
Peru. All right. We've got more Sports Look. Oh, and stick around. We've got a great Where Are They Now interview. It's coming up next, and we'll be back here on CARE. We've got Kyle Schrick with us. A member of the Benedictine College football team in the early 2000s. Kyle, I appreciate your time, man. How you doing?
Hey, Tom. It's always good to hear from you. It's always good to hear a familiar voice from back home. I know you're a staple on a lot of radios of the farmers this time of year back home and in the surrounding areas. So it's always good to hear from you.
Well, let's talk about your back home. You are a JCN guy. I mean, born and raised in northern Jefferson County. You came into Benedictine at a time when there were a bunch of JCN guys making that trip.
That's right. Nortonville, Kansas. Back in the late 90s, early 2000s, it looked like JCN kind of had a pipeline going to Benedictine. And, you know, paved by the way of guys like my brother Corey and Curtis Coppinger, Eric Knoll, Justin Knoll. I mean, I can name a bunch of guys that went up there at Benedictine and was able to play for essentially the home fans there in college. So it all worked out great.
And I have to think that a guy who I always considered a good personal friend who I knew forever, I have to think that Craig Shuler had quite a bit to do with that.
Oh, yeah. Craig Shuler, what a great guy. He actually recruited me, was a big part of the reason why I came to Benedictine. Wasn't able to play for him. He moved on to another coaching job before I got there. But was always good friends with him, loved talking to him, great guy, would always have a smile on his face, joking with you, truly missed, just one of the best, so, yeah.
Now, let me ask you about, before you got to high school, grade school, were you in St. Joseph's?
No, I was at JCN, so JCN Middle School.
Okay, because I didn't know if St. Joseph's was still going at the time when you were there, or if that was where you went. Because you may not know it, I'm an old St. Joseph's grade school guy.
Yeah, I think it dissolved by the time I was around or getting there. I think they still took a few younger kids, preschool age, stuff like that. But the old grade school, it went away when it was my time. I know my dad went there. I was never graced to go there, though.
You talked about some of the other guys, including your brother, Corey, who came from Jeff North up to Benedictine, and having an older brother who was not only on the team, but growing up, and you were playing ball against him, whether you were in high school, whether you were in the backyard as a kid, that had to be kind of an advantage. I mean, I'm sure you got banged around quite a bit by the bigger guys, but you know what? I bet it toughened you up and taught you a lot about football.
Oh, it absolutely did. We spent a lot of time in the churchyard playing football, playing baseball. I got my share of broken bones because of the older friends and the older guys. But like you said, it taught me a lot, made me tough, made us all tough, made us all better players, more competitive. It was one of the reasons why I decided to go to Benedictine. He was there. He made it a lot easier, as far as transitioning into that college, playing, speed. So it always helped, growing up and then especially, in college. It was just another familiar face that I could get used to that made the transition a lot easier.
You were in the Benedictine football teams from 2000 through 2003. Did you get to start at all as a freshman?
I did. I started the very first game. Coach Gartmeier, had the faith in me to stick me in there and get my lumps, and it did nothing but help me throughout my entire career. You know, I was able to play next to and behind a bunch of great defensive linemen and linebackers, and, you know, I could spend the next 15 minutes or next segment listing all the great players that played in front of me and played behind me, but that freshman year, they made it really easy on me by taking on the blocks and making those holes where all I had to do was just come up, just fill the hole, make a tackle.
And, of course, Raven, so, yeah. Raymond fans understand that at that time, freshmen playing at Benedictine, that just didn't happen much. I mean, that was unheard of. Jamie Mueller didn't play until he was a sophomore. I mean, you don't see many freshmen who played for Coach Wilcox. So you've got to look back at that and go, yeah, that was good.
Oh, well, not necessarily. I don't think I was good. But like I said, I think anybody just needs the opportunity. And I'm so grateful for Coach Gartenmeier to have faith in me to just stick me in there as a freshman and let me figure it out. And yeah, I got better as the years went on or as the games went on. I probably wasn't as good as what people thought I was that very first game. But like I said, I attest that all to the players that were playing beside me and in front of me and they just made it a whole heck of a lot easier to get it all figured out and then, just to keep going. So
we've got Kyle Schrick with us, defensive back for Benedictine. Number 7, right?
Yes, number 7.
I thought that's what I remembered. I was just trying to make sure here. Coppinger was 5,
yeah.
And anyway, yeah, how do you guys, those single-digit numbers?
Coppinger was 5, and I was 7 all the way through high school and into college, so it worked out.
Who was your high school coach down there? Was it McMillan?
Yeah, Coach Mark McMillan, and Trey Gaspard was the defensive coordinator.
Okay. How good were the Chargers?
Oh, man. We had some teams to be reckoned with. We were strong, fast, kind of had it all. Just a bunch of farm-raised boys, you know, that came out and worked hard. Our weight program consisted of throwing hay for the local farmers in the summertime and doing stuff like that. We thought we were pretty good until playoff time would come around and the bigger boys from Frankfort and Centralia, who guys that are on that team that I'm still best friends with, nowadays, Cole Alvers and Kurt Sudbecks and Brock Schwartz, all those guys that we played in high school and in playoff games would come down and whoop our butts. So we were good until we needed to be better and then would get beat. So,
but you played and again in 2000 through 2003 and you are one of those rare guys who not only started as a freshman, we mentioned how unusual that was, but you were on 4 consecutive national championship playoff teams.
Yeah. We had a really, really, really good class. I think our class went down in history as having the highest winning percentage as a class from 2000 to 2003, total wins. So we had a bunch of good guys. A bunch of good guys stuck around and didn't transfer or didn't quit. Guys that grew together and grew to count on each other and play together and play tough. It just did nothing but make us more successful. So
that's really, this is a difficult question and there may not be an answer to it, but you had those 4 playoff teams. Was there one of those years? And I know this year they're recognizing the 0-1 just because of the mathematical thing, but was there one of those teams that stood out for you more than another or a season that you thought, wow, this thing's fantastic?
You know, they all had their reasons to be special, and it's hard to pick out one more than the other. You know, my first year, my freshman year, able to play with my brother and Curtis and Eric Noel and guys like that always made it special. And then obviously the Final Four team with all the guys that were all Americans and just all world players and to be able to go that far during a time in Benedictine where it hadn't happened in a whole lot. You know, and then there's the years that following where you get to play with your friends that you grew up with at college, being able to be side by side with them. So all 4 years were very, very, very special for very different reasons. Like I said, the Final Four season was obviously one of the better ones, and then being able to play with my brother my freshman year was always up there too.
Let's talk about that 0-1 Final Four team. I mean, here was a team that had gone through the regular season with 1 loss to Evangel, and then you get into the postseason. People are going to remember that, you know, that first playoff game with Northwest Oklahoma State and that final play of the game. Where were you at when Fowler caught that ball?
Man, I think I was holding hands with Reggie Webb, who was a cornerback at that time, and maybe Byron. All the backfield was kind of right there. We were a little defeated. We had let Northwest kind of drive down that last drive and score on them. On us to take the lead. So we were down, never gave up the hope. We're always hopeful. And it all started with them kind of squib kicking it to to Hubbard, and Hubbard taking it to at least the 50, which that was probably one of the biggest mistakes I ever did, was not kick it deep, but it gave Miles a chance to at least get it to the end zone. And once we saw Fowler come down and those arms go up, it was just chaos. I couldn't even remember what we did after that point. So
we had Hubs on a few weeks ago, and he was talking about, you know, in that play, he said that he was in the backfield and was to be blocking, but there was nobody rushing. Everybody had dropped back on that play. He said he had the best seat in the house for the pass that was not supposed to go to Fowler, but was actually going for Johnson.
Craig Johnson, who is a great friend and the shortest guy on the team. It's weird how things work out. It's weird how everybody knows exactly where they're at when that happens. It's just one of those events that you'll just never forget. People still post it on Facebook, and it still brings back so many memories. It was just the right place, right time, right people to get it all done. And it was just a great, great, great moment in life. To be able to celebrate that, and then especially on the football field, too, to be able to experience it and be a part of it.
And then that earned you the chance to play Evangelist a second time to hopefully avenge that only loss on the season. We went down there, the windiest game in the history of college football, I think.
We did. They had some good players, and they were predicated on passing. They had a really good quarterback and a really good tight end, a really big tight end. Windy day, so it helped us. Our defense was dominant that year anyway, so then you throw in the factor that there's going to be wind involved, it's going to be a little more dominant that day, and Coach Wilcox had the confidence in getting the ball or kicking the ball to them going in the second half and playing the advantage with the wind and getting the ball and the wind in the fourth quarter. It all worked out. It was just a great all-around game for the players, the defense, the offense, coaches, everybody involved.
When you went into that season, I mean, I guess in all of your seasons, did you just have a little swagger? Did you have the feeling early in the year, you know, we're this good, we're going to be in the playoffs again? Or was that something that kind of came to the team as the season went on?
We always knew we were good. Our coaches instilled that in us. Coach Gartmeier is a huge motivator. And he made sure that no matter how good we thought we are, we could get better. And we had that slogan of day by day, you get better and better. A team that can be beat and a team that won't be beat. And we said that every day. And they ingrained that into our heads to, no matter how good we thought we were, we could get better. And we did. We got better every day, and we got better every week, every game, until finally it culminated into the playoffs and then the final four games. So
tremendous coaching staff. You mentioned, you know, Coach Wilcox and then Coach Gartenmeyer. Coach Gartenmeyer, an inspirational guy, not the most soft-spoken guy in the world on the sideline.
No, not at all. And if you hear him on the sidelines, you should hear him in practice. He's just very boisterous, and it's not in a bad way. He's going to get your attention, and it's with nothing but love and caring, and he's just a great teacher, a great motivator, a great friend now. He was like a father figure to me when I left home and went to Benedictine. He kind of put me under his wing and helped me through the ropes, and he was just one of those guys that you knew that you could count on for anything, whether it was to bail you out of jail that night or go to church with you the next morning. You know, just one of those guys that you could always count on. Just like I said, a great teacher, a great motivator. Love him.
Kyle Schreck with us, a member of the Benedictine 2000 through 2003 teams. And, you know, Kyle, as we started this season, and, you know, records are made to be broken, you were number four on the all-time tackle list. You've been bumped to number five. Jalen James at Benedictine now, who's a guy who could be playing football after his college career, frankly, has stepped up beyond you just a little bit. But, man, that's a tremendous accomplishment. 4 years and, you know, a lot of tackles and on a lot of plays. Again, you mentioned great teammates around that helped that.
Yeah, you know, records are made to be broken, and I'm glad to be in the top five. I'd just be glad to be in any of the record books. I'm so happy for the guys that have more tackles or play more games or do whatever. That just means the team's better. So, like I said, being in the record books, it can be attested to two or three things. You know, playing early, which Coach Gartmeier trusted in the fact that he could put me in there as a freshman. Playing essentially injury-free throughout your whole career, being on the field a lot, and then being next to guys that are going to take the load off of you. You don't have any kind of responsibilities other than what you're doing yourself that day. You don't have to worry about the guy in front of you, the guy beside you, or the guy behind you. Those things make it pretty easy to make tackles and to get in the record books. And like I said, I'm happy for anybody that breaks records and moves me up. And just keep me in the top 10, I guess.
Well, Kyle, you also came up 7 interceptions. I think a lot of people don't even realize that. They see he was a tackler, you know, with all of those. But, you know, you also were dropping back in coverage a lot. And, you know, a couple of your teammates who are also back there in coverage, Byron Mitchell Huey. You'll remember Byron because he played, I think, all the same years that you played. And,
yeah.
And you also had, you mentioned him earlier, a heck of a good guy, Brock Schwartz.
That's right. We had a great defensive backfield for most of my career, whether it be Byron, who still friends with today, still talk with on a regular basis, Brock, who I still see, you know, on a weekly basis, and Reggie Webb. We can go through a whole list of defensive backs that we had in my 4 years there that it's very easy to just put them on an island and just say, hey, they'll cover it. And all you got to do is worry about covering doing your part, doing your 111th. Those guys, were great at their job. Never had to worry about them doing anything wrong. You always knew that, they're going to be covering their guys. They're going to be handling their business. It just made it easier on the whole team. So.
Now, were you on the field? We talk about plays. We mentioned the Hail Mary pass. Everybody remembers where they were. Were you on the field? And I suspect you were when Guido made the 203-yard interception return when we were down in Oklahoma.
Yes, and that was it was a fumble recovery on the goal line, in the goal, 103 yards. Yeah, Austin Flourish and I think Jared Furman both came off the edge and they met at the running back, and the ball popped up and Guido got it. Guido, not the fastest guy in the world, one of the biggest guys in the world I've ever seen, but he took off. And Brock Schwartz made 2 outstanding blocks that Guido never would have made it to the end zone if it wasn't for Brock. But it was an amazing play on all ends that starting with the 2 defensive ends crashing and then Guido having the wherewithal to pick it up, scoop it, and then score, at least make it 103 yards, which a lot of guys wouldn't even make it 103 yards. Brock, just the 2 guys that are about to tackle Guido to sacrifice himself to get Guido all the way. It was an outstanding play. Second or third plays that I always remember. So
I was scared to death he was going to run out of gas.
Oh, man. It just takes a fortitude just to get there, no matter if you're fast or not. But to have that kind of energy at the end of the game, you know, he'd been playing the whole game just to get that far was pretty amazing in itself.
One last thing is we turn back to you in your career. You're in law enforcement now, right? And tell me how your Benedictine, you know, experience in education has kind of been reflected in that.
I'm a firefighter.
Okay,
at Granby Fire Department.
Mm-hmm.
So in the public sector field. And it's amazing what that degree, just the name Benedictine College on your resume does. It doesn't matter what you majored in or what you graduated with, what your GPA was. The fact that you have a degree from Benedictine College goes a long ways when it comes to job interviews, getting jobs that you want. People recognize that name now. It happens so often that I'm on a plane, traveling somewhere, representing Benedictine with a hat or a shirt, and somebody will come up to you and say, hey, I know where Benedictine is, or I know about Benedictine, or my son goes to Benedictine, or I went to Benedictine. It's just amazing how much the name has grown in the past 30, 40 years. It's just a testament to the administration up there that they're doing such a fantastic job and making Benedictine just a household name all across the country. It's just amazing to see and to watch.
Well, for Raven fans, Kyle Schrick is a household name. And, Kyle, we really appreciate you taking some time out, man. I know that you've got a million things going on, and on a little time off, you got other things you could be doing. And we appreciate you having shared a little bit of that with us here today. Best of luck to you, my friend.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it. And thanks for taking time out to talk to me. And go Ravens.
Welcome back. It's always great to hear from Kyle Schrick. What a great guy. Old JCN guy from the area, Raven. It's super to hear from some of those guys. Don't forget, coming up on Saturday, we've got a great halftime. Danny Neal is going to be our halftime guest, Raven receiver from 93 to 96. Gus, rapid fire. Kansas City Royals schedule is weaning down. You only need one hand now.
Yeah, down to four games remaining. The Royals came away with a nice victory last night. And at this point, nobody really cares about the wins or the losses or who's scoring or who's doing what, except for one thing.
There's only one thing.
Right.
The Perez race.
Yep. Salvador Perez hits a home run last night. Goes up to 48 home runs on the season, 121 RBIs. Can I tell you how nice is it to have that guy under contract? Because with those kind of numbers going to free agency, I mean, you could have broke the bank.
Yeah. Now, here's the deal. Can you hit another home run on a bad ankle?
Yeah, see, that's a crazy thing. Salvi slips going down the stairs yesterday.
How nuts is that? I've always considered him a little injury-prone, and always some weird thing happening.
But I would say yes. Okay, long and short is yes. I think that for the last four games, if he can tape it up and go out there, you let him DH. I don't care if you smoke one to the wall. You know what I mean? Just walk back to the dugout, right? Like, you don't even have to run that thing out. Just hit one more. He's tied right now with Jorge Soler for the club record, but really, be neat if he could get to 50. I just see that light dimming right now.
Okay, come on. We're going to put you out here one more time. Here we are with four games left. By the time we return for the next sports look, the season will be all done. Stuff will be, you know, the bats and balls are going to be in a closet somewhere. Can he hit one, two, none? What do you think? Four games. Wait, he's playing Cleveland.
I know. I just don't think he does. I don't think he hits anymore.
Will Cleveland pitch to him?
Yes. Why not? And for Cleveland right now, if it's just like last night's game, right, you've got younger guys. They're out there trying to make a name for themselves and make the roster next year. I mean, they're throwing bullets and hoping for the best. I mean, and I think that's what happened last night was a guy thought he was going to squeeze one past Perez. And, I mean, he's just seeing that thing like a beach ball right now, and he planted that thing. So, yeah, I think with the ankle and things, I don't know that he hits another home run, no. You've got him for one.
One. I got him for 49. He will not get to 50.
Okay.
But he will set the new mark. There. Now, Kansas City Chiefs have got everybody within a, 400-mile radius of Arrowhead Stadium in tears right now. They've got them worrying. They got them sweating. And should they be?
No. I saw Bubba said something the other day. For all you new money Chiefs fans that are, like, ready to jump, he said he would take your Buffalo Bills tickets off your hands, you know, here in a couple weeks. Chiefs fans have been here, right? I mean, I think that's the thing maybe we're a little spoiled with right now is with Patrick Mahomes is you're like, you're not used to losing. But right now, I mean, the Chiefs have lost to two probably playoff teams.
I would say that's fair.
But, again, that's where it's like KU basketball, right? The bar is just a little higher. If you want to get to the national championship, you got to beat those teams, right?
And let's understand that when you have a great season like they've had the last couple of years, your next season schedule is going to reflect that.
You're playing the first place schedule. Yeah. And I think that's what everybody's saying is, wow, watch out for Denver. They're 3-0. But Denver's also playing a last place schedule.
Yes.
And I think Denver, if you look, somebody was talking about this, that Denver's 3-0, but by week 10 will most likely be 3-6. Because I think their upcoming schedule is like the Raiders, the Bills, the Ravens, the Chiefs, and the Chargers or something like that. I mean, like, it is just kind of a tough hill for the Raiders to climb. So, again, for Kansas City, you also turned the ball over four times and only lost by 6 points. So, I mean, you clean a few things up, you probably win that game by a couple touchdowns.
And you go over this week to Philadelphia to play an Eagles team that is not particularly outstanding. And you've got that whole sentimental thing with Andy going back to his old place and a chance to set a great mark having won 100 games with two different teams if he can win Saturday.
Yeah, and you know Andy, he's humble. He's playing it down. He doesn't really want to feed too much into it. But, you know, in the back of his mind, especially as a Hall of Fame coach like he is, I mean, that's a big deal. You're going back to really where you got into head coaching and people love you back there, right? I mean, and for the Eagles, how about this? Story broke this morning that the front office has given the blessing to the general manager to start looking at a possible trade for Deshaun Watson with the Texans because it sounds like the money's coming down on that kind of a deal. So you've got an Eagles team who has just way too much going on, and if you've seen them play, right now they don't look like they're headed the right way.
And here's the funny thing. I mean, you think the guys in Vegas don't know what they're doing. They've got the over-under at this game at 54.5. You know how many points were scored in the last week's game, right? 54.
Mm-hmm.
So they know where to put that break number at. Chiefs are a touchdown favorite. Now tonight, if you have the appropriate channels available on your machine, you can watch NFL football, Jaguars, and Bengals 7:20 ball game.
So if you're more interested in watching good football at 7:20 on ESPN, you can watch the Canes as they go to Blacksburg and take on Virginia Tech.
See?
That'll be way more interesting than this game.
I have to agree with that. Ravens are going to be at the Broncos. So the Ravens, I thought, would be 3-0 maybe, you know, after that Chiefs win, but they are 2-1. Broncos, you mentioned earlier, undefeated. Denver, a one-point favorite. That's silly.
Yeah, it's a home field advantage, right? They're
giving
three.
What in the world are they thinking?
I would definitely take the Ravens if you're, you know, interested in any of that. Buccaneers at the Patriots Sunday night. Tom Brady
big.
Going back to Foxborough.
Yeah,
I mean, you knew that.
How
would
are the
be
fans going to welcome
time.
Him?
Not well.
You don't think?
No,
I think after all those wins, they are going to embrace him and go, yay for you.
Yeah, I don't know. Especially after winning the championship last year, I don't know that they're going to be so thrilled about it. Monday night football should be great. Raiders at Chargers. I think that could be a real fun one.
Old AFC West teams coming back together. You mentioned a little bit about college football.
Nope,
Kansas Duke? That was last week.
Yeah, Kansas at Duke last Saturday.
They had a lead.
They took a lead into the break and then, yeah, couldn't do much with it after that. So this week, it doesn't get any better. Kansas is going to Ames to take on a 2-2 Iowa State team who...
Right. I thought we'd go to beat Iowa, and
right.
Iowa's really good.
And
though, so.
Now Iowa State's lost, too, so I think they're struggling a little bit. But Iowa State will right the ship this weekend against the Hawks.
And again, you mentioned that the Canes play this weekend. Are there any like highly ranked teams playing one another this weekend?
Yeah, how about Oklahoma at Kansas State? Should be an okay game, but Arkansas at Georgia.
There's the one.
That's the one everybody's looking at. 11 a.m. game there. But how about this? UGA, an 18.5-point favorite. I don't see it. I honestly would, if I were Georgia, I'd be a little scared of this Arkansas team. They're playing well. And Baylor at Oklahoma State should be a good game Saturday night. And the game I'm not looking forward to is the national game on ABC Saturday night. Indiana at Penn State.
Yeah.
Doesn't do much for me.
No. But tell you what it does for us. Somebody's doing some great things with this schedule here on Care Radio, because tomorrow night we're going to be in Effingham, Kansas. Marhill Mount Academy, ACCHS, 7 o'clock kickoff here on Care. Saturday afternoon with a pregame at 12:30 and a 1 o'clock kickoff from Wilcox Stadium. The Benedictine Ravens hosting Culver Stockton. Certainly want to thank our Sportlook sponsors, Hamada Wealth Management, Gerber Electric, Taco Johnson Exchange Bank. Till the game tomorrow night for Gus Couch, Tom Couch. So long, everybody.